Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Shaiva Siddhanta 14 Works Continuation, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalai Chilvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
How are the Pati and Pasu different? If you say that Pati is all knowledgeable, his inherent nature is jnana, and the Pasus learn by teaching, through which they have their own experiences. The difference lies in the fact that God's physique, or our body, is a product of Maya, which is because of the grace that God had on us, He's given us. So this is a product of Maya. It is the body that we achieve, the soul achieves and gets into, and all that is based on the karma. Also the karma that it has earned by its previous residences, previous different bodies, and after getting into this body and all that, it's also a product of the grace, the shakti that Parameshwara has on us. So that's one major the difference between the physique of the souls and that of God. To help the souls evolve from their bonded nature and to liberate them, God has the concept of performing the panchakrityas, the five activities, namely creation, protection and sustenance, destruction, concealment, and finally grace. So at the end of it, whenever God still feels that we are still concealed by anava, then it is all hidden till then, and finally when the blanket of anava is shed, you come out, jnana is offered and the grace comes along there. So the five activities of God also. Now let's see about Pashus. According to Saiva Siddhanta, there is no count for souls, they are just too many. The simple fact that not two of them are similar or the same, we may conclude that every living being has a soul of its own, the karma of which determines the body that it has been offered. And in regular language, in technical terms, we either call it the Anma or Uyir in Tamil. Soul has a capacity to know, act according to its knowing, and also have the sense of desire, the concept of want, wanting things. That is where all your body organs and your senses comes in. So you have a command over what you want. You have an urge which commands you to ask for more and more, or sometimes less, all that is there. And these are because of the jnana, which is split into this is because of the three, all the need, the capacity to know is by jnana shakti, to act is by kriya shakti, and to desire is by Icha Shakti. These three Shaktis which are also in there. So by being taught something, it earns knowledge, it acts accordingly, and also has a development for, also has a desire, gross desire within itself. The capabilities are impaired, the capabilities to want right knowledge, do right things, desire right things, they are generally concealed off by anava. The first, because God has given us these jnana, the jnana shakti, kriya shakti and icha shakti also, to go in the right path, but because we are covered by anava, we choose the opposite things. Souls are dependent in nature, and it behaves like the one on which it depends. When it depends on worldly things, it behaves like them. When it depends on Shiva, it behaves like a divine being. That is why the concept of being associated with Shiva through Shaivites and Shaiva Acharyas, their words of wisdom and all that, is time and again reiterated. It needs to be a continuous process in order to get in, season oneself, help you mature, evolve over a period of time. Till then, we will be bound by all things that is not desirable, do things that are not to be performed, and get to know things which are not going to teach you the truth. So that's the nature of Anma. And depending on this, all the jivas are split into three types. Generally, Shaiva Siddhanta recognizes three types of jivas depending on the degree of bondage. Now this also includes the jivas, here includes all the devas, the various rishis, and Brahma and Vishnu and all of them too. So it is the first category, the souls that are bound by all the three pasas, that is Anava, Karma and Maya, which is generally the human beings here born in this world. So the common people here. So they are bound by all these three. And then you have the, they are like the Sakalar, they call the Sakalar. And then you have the second category where they are free from two bonds, namely Karma and Maya. They are just bound by Anava. That is why in several Puranas we see how Brahma and Vishnu, because of their ego and ignorance and arrogance as a byproduct, go on to question the authority of Shiva as the ultimate God also. That's how they are taught, and that is exactly why they are not put at par with Parameshwara, who is not bound by these malas. So it is just that one mala. And in the third category are souls that become free from Maya only during the Pralaya Kala. That's the final phase of destruction called the Pralaya Kala. Then you have the Sakalar, the Vijnana Kala and the Pralaya Kala. So this is how the three categories are framed. So people who are totally, because they are also attached to Maya, and that goes on. These include the various different forms of Shiva himself when he has given a hierarchy before, because as I told you yesterday, the concept of perceiving Sadashiva or the ultimate form of Shiva is much beyond the capacity of human beings, and people who perceive it are the ones who have already entered therein. So for people who have not understood and who are still here in this world, even during their concept of liberation, Parameshwara appears in front of them as this popular form that all of them have described to us, with the Jadabara, the crescent moon, Ganga and all the different bouquets of flowers that decorates his Jatabharam, carries an antelope, an axe and a Trishulam, the one who ornaments himself with skull and who wears the hide of a tiger, and the one who is with Basmadharanam and Trinetram and all that. The regular format which we can perceive is that of Shrikanta Rudra, who is a few steps below the ultimate Shiva who pervades. So even during the Pralaya Kalam, he also is sneered as Basma on the divine form, divine physique of ultimate Lord as Sadashiva. So there are these three types where you have the Sakalar, who are controlled by all these three malas. Then the Vijnakalar, where it is they are free from Karma and Maya, but bound by Anava alone. And then people who are free from Anava and Karma, but Maya still sticks on, and that is destructed during the Pralaya Kalam. So the Sakalar, Jnana Kalar and Pralaya Kalar, these are the three ways that Jivas are differentiated. Now into the three impurities. Now Anavam is like the cause for all negative qualities of the soul, and it is so designed that the souls, ever since their existence, have been bonded by Anavamala. And it is the Adimalam, or it is called the Anadimalam, that which has always existed. That's like the primary source of suffering for, or ignorance, primary source for ignorance, which causes the suffering for the souls. It's a source of ego, ignorance and all of it, hatred and anything which is not appealing. Anam is associated with the soul from a time when there was no beginning, ever since. For easy understanding, the most common example that is taken to help us understand how the souls are attached to Anava always is the common example of how a husk covers a grain of paddy, or you have the verdigris, or that component that goes along with copper always. You cannot separate it. It always goes to it. You need to wash it, scrub it to remove it. Similarly, the husk to be removed, you'll have to knead it, beat it out, winnow it, and finally get the rice grain alone for us. Similarly, the souls which are concealed by Anava has to go through a process to feel removed of it, to cleanse itself and come out as the pure thing that it is. Obscuring soul's power to know is the inherent nature of Anavam. So, to stop you or hinder you from applying your jnana, kriya and icha shakti in the right things is the role of Anavam. It is so called, it is, in fact, that's how the souls are. That's the default nature of the souls, and hence souls with which has anavam that is acting like that is called the swarupa lakshanam for the soul, which means the default characteristic of a soul. In association with karma and maya, anava takes the lead to mislead you, to know things mistakenly, to act, involve in activities that are not to be done, and force you to want things that are not desirable. And this nature of anavam is called as the tatastha lakshanam. So you have the nature of anavam, wherein it has the inherent nature to stop you from knowing right things. That's the swarupa lakshanam. And anavam, along with maya and karma, goes on to make you learn wrong things. One is stopping from learning good things, the other is forcing you to learn wrong things. So the first is called the swarupa lakshanam, which is inherent, natural. The second is called as tatastha lakshanam. It kind of clouds as the consciousness of the jiva, it kind of clouds the chit or the consciousness of the jiva, and makes them act like individual entities, like independent entities with limited knowledge and limited abilities. While the knowledge and abilities are actually way too much, the anavam kind of controls us and makes us act with limited knowledge and limited abilities. Anavam's action on the soul are summarized under different categories, and anavam is spoken, to the best of my knowledge, as the primary concept or the primary reason for all the sufferings in Shaiva Siddhanta. Not sure if there are other philosophies which has identified, which has successfully identified anavam or ego, through which you have arrogance and ignorance, as the primary reasons for all sufferings. So that is about anava. Now the second component, the second impurity, that is karma. Karma literally means action. Every action, as we know, has its own result, and everyone has to experience it, however small or big it is. Independent of the magnitude, any action will have its own result, and the performer will have to experience it. He has no choice. Good and evil, as it is popularly known, does not come from nowhere. It is because of what we have sowed. So we just reap what we have sowed. In philosophical language, both action and the result that you experience, both are called as karma. When you perform something, that's also karma. What happens to you, the experiences that you gain by performing that action, that is also called as karma. Many incidences in life, we are not sure as to why certain things happen. Not certain things, most of the things. Why were I born in a community like this? Why were I born in a region like this? Why were I born to the people whom I call as parents today? What is it that binds me? All these questions are best answered through the concept of karma, and how the balance is maintained that way. Now, so it is only because of this the differences are seen. Now, that is the best answer accepted through various philosophies. We see how a lot of Western scholars and all of them accept the concept of karma to understand this imbalance in a more balanced way. And how to win over it is by acting wise, sticking on to being truthful, and not being taken over by ignorance or ego and getting into wrong track. Whatever the challenging situation is, sticking on to your conscience and being and following the path that is laid out by the wise men is always going to lead you towards good karma, which will help you season yourself for a better chance in the next janma. So the results of one's action or karma in a particular life comes to the experience in the same life sometimes, or in the next life. So the balance, the quantity, quantifying it and carrying it over the next birth and all that is there. Depending on your action, good or bad, there is a way how you reap for it. There are acts that are answered, the experiences are gained right there in that birth, or sometimes it is carried over depending on you being a direct cause or an indirect cause. Now it is totally ignorant for us to sit and evaluate how the karma would act. It is the secret that is best known to God. There is absolutely no way that you can think, if I do this, this will be my experience, or after experiencing something, it is because of that. Because there can be several occasions where we were maybe not a direct cause, but an indirect cause. There are several stories that are discussed when it comes to the concept of understanding the balance by karma, whether you experience for your good and wrong in this birth, or some of it is carried over to the next birth, and as a result of your acts in this this birth. So that balance is best left to God. Instead of sitting and wasting time and understanding what will happen, whether I'll experience it now or whether it get carried over or is it going to be shared with someone, instead of that, the best way to probably act is to go by the words of God's that are understood by the words of the wise men. So good actions result in good and pleasant experiences, and evil actions definitely ends you up in bad or painful experiences. Fruit of one's karma is fed to the soul to come to experience by God at a suitable time and surrounding that is decided by him. You know, we see that, you know, when there is a traveler, he travels from one city to another. He has a good family here, he's healthy, doing everything, it's all fine, he's all good. Suddenly travels to a far off place, stays in another city. Unfortunately, the day he went there is a massive earthquake and he dies. Now, had he not taken up the travel, he would have probably still been alive to spend his time with his family and maybe happy and all that. But that one travel changed it. So the decision of God to balance the equation and find a reason for you to experience your karma based on your actions and creating a surrounding and a situation for it is totally under his control, much beyond the perception of mortal beings. The third is the concept of Maya. Maya is that subtle entity which is the first cause for all material things. Now that is the canvas which God uses to create all that you see as the worldly the world that surrounds you. Generally, the Vedantins describe Maya to be an illusion. It is not that way in Siddhanta. Maya is real. It is there. To perform any karma or action, material objects such as the you'll need the body and all the worldly things, because to perform an action you will need a performer and a venue for him. Whatever it is, however small or big, you will need at least the performer and the venue and the surrounding for it. So all that, the surrounding and the performer, is all brought in through Maya. These are created by God using Maya. This is similar to the potter making pots out of clay and how the wheel comes in and the stick helps in, water is added and the dough is kneaded and finally the wheel rotates around to make the pot. So that's how it is. So you have potter, the material that goes into it, and materials that supports it. The wheel, the stick and all that is meant equipments that support him. That's how Maya is used by God to create the pot. The physical body is made from Maya and it is given to the soul. So consider Maya as there, and you know, he uses it to make the soul, make a body which is like the pot to have the soul in. And the birth of the soul is basically obtaining the physical body. That's the creation concept. So he creates a body to which the soul goes in. Please understand, he never creates the souls, it's only the body that is created. At death, again, he does not destroy or command death upon the soul, it's only the body that dies. It disintegrates and it disappears. We all know how, be it cremation or burial, you know, after a point of time, all that was left there is forgotten, it is not there, and it is left back. It kind of disintegrates and disappears. Thus, birth and death are mere transformation from one state to another, from Maya to a physical body, and again the same way back. So that's how the creation, the concept of creation, other things are to be understood. And to perform this as an act, to make someone as the potter, that is where the role of Brahma comes in. When we say that Parameshwara is the only person who is capable of doing all the five acts, he can also depute someone, give them limited knowledge only to operate within that domain to perform this. That is where the concept of Brahma and Vishnu and all that comes in. But they are not soul, they cannot conduct the whole show without the divine command and the power bestowed upon them by Parameshwara. So that's exactly the way the other devas behave. Finally, with going by the concept of Maya and how the worldly things are made, there are the concept of tattvas. When material things are made out of Maya, when they originate out of Maya, they first originate as parts from it, then it evolves, called as the tattvas. They are individual components as tattvas, which goes into a combination, alloys into something that is homogeneous and gives us the world around. So in most of the Indian philosophical thought processes, schools, we see that these tattvas are classified into 24 of them. Shaiva Siddhanta extends it and calls that there are 36 of these tattvas. Now, although Maya is just a unit entity, it's just singular in nature, by the way it acts, it is divided into two parts where you have the pure component of Maya and the impure component also. That is why we say Maya is not illusion and it is real. Or Shuddha Maya and Ashuddha Maya are as they are to be understood. Of these 36 tattvas, 5 of the tattvas belong to the Shuddha Maya. That includes Shiva Tattva, Shakti, Shiva Shakti, Ishvara. And so those 5 tattvas are to be understood as the Shuddha Maya. Shiva Shakti or the divine power of Lord Shiva acts on them. So these are the Shiva Tattvas, the 5 of them, and the Shakti, Shiva Shakti, that's because of the union of Shiva along with the grace, which is like inseparable, that acts on these 5 Tattvas. And the remaining 31 Tattvas are called as Ashuddha Maya. Of these 31 also, there is a split where you have the first 7 Tattvas that are used to awaken the soul's capabilities and to drive it to a level where it can gain experiences. And these are called as the Vidya Tattvas. Of the remaining 24 Tattvas, they are necessary for the formation of the physical body, like all your, the biological aspects that goes into it and its functions and the experiences. You have your senses. Each senses has a way to help you experience certain things. Your nose has the sense to smell, your ears has the sense to listen to, your eyes has the sense to visualize, to see things. So each of it, you have the organ and the sense and the act that it performs. So each of it goes into making the 24 tattvas. And these are called the Prakriti Maya tattvas and are formed by the Mula Prakriti, which is again a product of Ashuddha Maya. So you have Maya to begin with, which is split into Shuddha Maya and Ashuddha Maya. Shuddha Maya has the 5 Shiva tattvas on which Shiva Shakti Tattvam acts directly, and then you have the remaining 31 Mayas. That 31 is also split into 24 plus 7, where the 24 Tattvas are the Vidya Tattvas and the remaining are the Vidya Tattvas, and the remaining 24 are the Prakriti Maya Tattvas. So this is the classification. Now, because I've mentioned the word Prakriti, let's see how it is understood in Shaiva Siddhanta. Literally, Prakriti means the nature and it is a form of the Guna. Guna is made up of 3 types, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Our experience of be it happiness or sorrow, pain or the kind of confused state or feeling sad, all of these are forms of varying combination of these 3 Gunas. That is why it is demanded that we shed these varying proportions of Gunas and achieve a level where it is balanced. So the 24 Tattvas of the Prakriti Maya Tattvas are also a part of this form. The soul is always under the bondage of these 3 malas. When the bondage is broken, that is where the liberation concept comes in. How does the soul kind of evolves? I've told you souls are there always. Before taking the birth, the soul is in a state of surrounded by anava. That is kind of visualized as a dark state where it is covered by ignorance, unable to exhibit its own capacity to use its shaktis, jnana, kriya and icha shakti, because it's covered by the by anava. This state of the soul is called as kevalam, which is like the natural state of being. That's how it is. That's the power of anava that acts on it. Lord Shiva, out of his mercy, out of his grace for us, wants to help the soul and provides it a subtle body, forms with what is called as the with the Vidya Tattvas of Maya. So he uses Maya and uses the Vidya Tattvas to give us the soul. And with that, this is called as the Puri Ashtakayam. In fact, the 8 Tattvas that has gone into it. So the Ashtakayas are there and called as the Puri Ashtakayam. With this body, with the soul within, for the first time, the soul starts moving. And depending on that, that can be understood as the first karma ever performed. And depending on that first karma, all its result, the experiences and the knowledge that it gains and all that will be desired. For the result of this karma to come as an experience of God, he provides us the kind of body. So, the way we experience him, the way we understand him, chances that we get to understand him and all that is by the karma. On taking birth, slowly the soul acts or performs or gets into the karma cycle, performs something new, and the result of the past karma also comes in to the experience through it. If this action gives rise to another karma, which again has to come to experience and get exhausted, it has to take another birth. So this vicious cycle of birth as different beings in different bodies is because of the karma that we perform with our limited knowledge. Thus, karma and birth follows one after another till the soul finally gets liberated by performing karmas that are completely balanced without giving scope for another birth. That is exactly why in several Puranas we see how all forms of living beings like birds and animals, all of them have performed Shiva Puja. And you know, depending on the way they performed and the other actions in that particular birth, they are given another birth to conclude. The best example to know this is from the life of Kochengaucholanayanar, how he was born as an elephant in Thiruvaneka in Jambukeswara Kshetram without he still being still an elephant, still maybe the karma from his previous birth helped him undertake a Shiva Puja in a very simple level to his capacity. All that an elephant can do is probably pick some water in its trunk, come and shower it upon Shivalinga as an Abhishekam. It considers it as an Abhishekam, so Parameshwara takes it at that level. So that's again the mercy of Shiva. But when this was happening, it got into an ordeal with the spider, which was also trying to perform Shiva Puja in its own way by weaving a web on top of Shiva as a Vidhanam. And how the elephant, maybe there was a little of Anava that was still sticking onto it, went on to destroy the spider. And the spider manages to go into its trunk and gets beaten on the floor, and the spider dies. Shiva liberates the spider at that level, but the elephant is born again. But because of the Shiva Punyam that it had earned all those years in his birth, for having performed the Abhishekam to Shivalinga daily, and you know, he's given a birth where as a king, as a Chola king, where the Punya, the Shiva Punya which was carried over, helped him reach a life where he could win over a lot of battles, rule the country, and go on to build several shrines to Parameshwara. So that act of constructing all these temples and making more people worship Shiva to liberate gives him moksha in that particular birth. This is one of the most prominent and the easiest story for us to understand. So in every birth, the soul through its action gains experience, and through that experience gains knowledge. As it gains knowledge, the grip of ignorance loosens, and anava, which is the grip of ego, loosens, and ignorance starts diluting, and finally it starts moving towards liberation. That's exactly why we'll have to suffer all these births, reach a level where we have been given a body with all senses, and that is exactly why these senses are time and again advised to be spent in activities that will help us earn Shiva Punyam. So that's why you have Padigams in Tevaram, where Upper Varman details out the activity that each of the body parts should perform. The eyes are supposed to visualize all that is Shaivite in nature. The legs are to circumambulate the temple, the hands are to worship the Lord, the mouth and the tongue is to speak the greatness of Shiva and chant all his names. So you start putting all your organs in activities that will earn a Shiva Punyam, and tune it to that extent and achieve liberation. So this will help us come out of the vicious cycle of life and death. The states of the Anavamala finally gets ripened to be removed at a level, and you undergo a complete new process of attaining jnana, which helps us in liberation. Liberation is understood as a gift from God and the result of his direct intervention. When the jivas are immersed in maya, they learn about a world that which is not going to be there throughout. In Shaiva Siddhanta, the jiva does not, moksha does not mean that its existence as an individual soul is lost forever, only it takes another different form. After liberation, the jivas enjoy a special relationship with Shiva called as Bheda Bheda. There is a state of being different and non-different, which essentially means that, you know, there is duality between the two as they linger on together, one being the whole and the other being a part of it, but the unity still persists. Shiva is the whole and we are just a part of it. We are uniform, we get together, but again we don't become the same. Yeah, though we become one, we don't become the same. Relationship is not that of I'm sorry, though we become same, we don't become one. So it's more a relationship of being same and not one, or sameness and not oneness. In this liberated state, the jivas experience unlimited bliss and freedom from all the three impurities of the samsara. So this is how the complete concept, all the important answers for philosophy to understand Shaiva Siddhanta is answered. Now each of the topic discussed here, be it that of Pati, Pasu, the three impurities which goes on to become the Pasa, and the concept of creation, and the way the Dhanukarana Bhuvana Bhogas are given to us, how we experience the tattvams that goes into making the world and the individual self and all that, and the concept of how to get over the cycle of life and death and lead one life where we attain liberation, at least strive to get into activities where we attain liberation, has to be understood through several hours of lectures through acharyas. I've only tried to give a very, very simple and a humble introduction to it, and giving it in English was a new challenge. I've had to be very particular about the words used so as to not misguide. I've just tried my best. There might be words that did not probably give the exact meaning. So I leave of all the lectures in the series, this particular lecture is best understood through an acharya. Get your sermons from them and learn it in a language that you understand best. So with that, I finish today's lecture. Tomorrow is the last session for the series, and tomorrow's lecture is it's titled The Practices That Goes Into Following Shaivism, or the traditions and practices that we get ourselves equipped with and make it a habit to continue to practice Shaivism, what all goes into it. Ponnum meiporulum taruvanai bogamum thiruvum punarpanai pinnai enpulaiyai poruppanai pulaiyalam thavira panippanai inna tanmayan endru ariyavonna emmanai எளிவந்த பிரானை அன்னம் வைகும் வயல் பழனத்தனி ஆரூரானை மறக்கலுமாமே. வாழ்க அந்தனர் வானவரானினும் வீழ்க தன்புணல் வேந்தனும் மோங்குக. ஆழ்க தீயதெல்லாம் அரண்நாமமே சூழ்க வையகமும் துயர் தீர்கவே. வான்முகில் வழாத பெய்க மலிவளம் சுரக்க மன்னன் கோன்முறை அரசு செய்க குறைவிலாத உயிர்கள் வாழ்க. நான்மறை அறங்கள் ஓங்க நத்தவம் வேள்வி மல்க மேன்மைகொள் சைவநீதி விளங்குக உலகமெல்லாம். மூர்த்தியெல்லாம் வாழி எங்கள் மோன குருவாழி அருள் வார்த்தை என்றும் வாழி அன்பர் வாழி பராபரமே. எல்லாம் ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ கிருபை. ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ மகாராஜோ விஜயத்தே. ஆரூரா தியாகேசா.